Chapter 3. High anchor, 42 Hydra Tertius, 14 hours later. An automated voice was blaring out across the principal embarkation deck of the carrier Loudon.
Move up to designated markers. Move up to designated markers. Boarding by company will commence in 30 minutes.
Buzzers sounded, and the announcement repeated, fighting with a cacophony of machine noise and shouts echoing around the vast platform. Swathed in cascades of steam and fanfared by raucous sirens, the next bank of dropships rose up from the service bays on the through-deck elevators. Flight crews in russet overalls ran forwards to detach the undercarriage bolts with power ratchets, and servitors strutted up, tool limbs raised, to uncase and activate the auto-guidance arrays built into bulges under the dropship's cockpits. Overhead, the hangar's primary hoist system swung a brace of hook-nosed escort fighters down the length of the deck to the stern catapult rails. There was a sudden thunderous bellow of tank engines starting up. A row of 40 twin-barreled assault tanks, drawn up along a line of thick yellow chevrons painted on the deck, began revving their turbines and snorting fumes from their exhausts as service crews began to lower the cargo ramps of the massive bulk lifters.
Move up to designated markers, the automated voice repeated.
Hurtado Bronzy signed the data slate with a flourish and removed his biometric from the slot in its side.
Your company stands certified, Het,
the liveried weaponsmith said formally, taking the slate back.
March in fortune.
Bronzy made the old salute of the unity fist against his chest, nodded, and turned back to his unit.
You heard the call, he yelled. Designated markers. Move your arses.
Designated markers, Che repeated.
The Jokers hoisted their heavy kit and weapons and advanced from the check station onto the main platform. Shouting and waving their arms, the Bashaws shepherded them into positions on the red-painted sections of decking.
Request permission to furl the company banner for embarkation, Che said.
Bronzy nodded. There was a fire in his belly. For the first time in months, his appetite was back. He looked along the length of the giant platform. His Bashaws were lowering the standard, and the pikemen had temporarily set their long weapons on the deck beside them. 40 meters to his left, the Carnivales had drawn up along their markers, and beyond them, the troubadours. To his right, the 41st Zanzibari Hort were streaming forwards to their line. The air smelled of gun oil and engine smoke. Somewhere, diligently but futilely, a marching band was playing in competition with the general racket. Honan Mu and her aides, all carrying small kit bags and dressed in foul weather gear, advanced across the open deck towards him.
Het Bronzy, Mu said.
He made a namaste.
My beloved Axor, you look especially fragrant and, waterproof today.
The aides sniggered.
Operational? She asked, remaining composed.
We have just been certified, he replied. We're ready to ramble, Axor. When do we get to find out where?
Any moment, Bronzy, she replied.
She appreciated his annoyance. Namat Jira had kept the details of the operation close to his chest, a mistake, in her opinion. After the disaster of Nerth, the Lord Commander should have been working to rebuild morale. Instead, he had become even more poisonous than usual. The odium of defeat, she suspected. But there was no excuse. The expedition fleet had reassembled at the edge of the Nerthine system 28 hours after the final collapse of the evacuation effort. From there, they had made shift to Empasal for refit and recovery. A brief furlough had been granted in the souks and circuses of Empasal, but for nothing like long enough. Word had spread that Namat Jira was in close discussion with the high officers of the fleet, and some new operation was already being planned. There was a rumour that the entire expedition might be dispatched to 6319 to support the Lunar Wolves in the compliance war that they had undertaken there. That, Mu believed, would have suited well. All thoughts of failure and loss, the bitter smirch of mirth, would have been quickly expunged by the glory of serving alongside the new War Master and his noble legion. However, Namatjira had evidently made other plans. He had declared that the expedition would be mounting an operation in concert with the Alpha Legion, and ordered immediate embarkation, an act so premature that nearly 8,000 army casualties had to be left at Empasal, unfit for service, along with 4 carriers with refits and repairs still pending. To remedy the diminished strength of the 670th expedition, Namatjira hastily enfranchised 2 brigades of Lusitan heavy infantry and an armoured cavalry company from Promatia, together with their carrier ships and tenders and 16 fleet auxiliary and fire support vessels. When the expedition departed Empasal, its strength stood at about 2/3 of the force that had begun the Nerthine compliance. Even with Jeveth's titans gone, it was a considerable presence. And, of course, there was an Alpha Legion battle barge at the head of the convoy. Namatjira had subjected his forces to a 4.5-month shift to an undisclosed location. Onboard training continued as usual, but morale had wilted quickly. No one would say where they were going, or what manner of undertaking they would be expected to make. Namatjira seemed not to care. It was as if he had something to urgently prove, or wished to throw himself back into the field after the Nerthine debacle. Mu privately speculated that he was borrowing a little too much of the Alpha Legion's pitiless pragmatism. A week before arrival, Namatjira ordered his forces to begin preparations for ground assault and announced that the mission target had been designated as 42 HTX. This was greeted with general puzzlement. According to form, the campaign should have been officially labelled 670-26. Evidently, they were not heading for a compliance action. 42HT was a planetary code, and the X indicated extraordinary operations. Namatjira informed his officer caste that he had committed the expedition to support the Alpha Legion in a classified undertaking, and that Alpharius had obtained direct permission from the War Master for extraordinary operations status. Only the demands of deployment preparation, the daily routine of weapons certification and fitness tests, kept their minds, collectively, from wondering what the hell they were all getting into. Mu turned to Tifane, who opened the black leather wallet she was holding and took out a sealed packet of papers. Mu took it and handed it to Bronzy. "Your operational orders," she said.
"At last," Bronzy said.
He held the packet up to his ear and shook it experimentally.
"What does it say?" he grinned.
Mu resisted the temptation to grin back.
"I have no idea. We all get to read the details at the same time. You'll brief in transit. Get ready for last-moment sept, Council, as I get up to speed."
"This is going to be fun, isn't it?" Bronzy asked.
"Rather depends on your definition of fun, Hurtado," she replied.
He shrugged his heavy armoured shoulders.
"Well, you know, dropping blind into a place we don't know, to go up against we know not what, with no advanced tactics, that sort of thing."
She returned his grin with a mordant look.
"Then, yes, this is going to be fun," she agreed.
Namatjira held out his arms, and the eunuch dressers slid on his full-length gloves and buttoned them around his shoulders and armpits. The gloves formed the sleeves of his dark tan leather doublet. He flexed his fingers to settle them into the gloves, as another dresser draped a cape of fur and zebra skin over his left shoulder, securing it with a golden fibula. He extended his right hand, and the Warden of the Seal carefully slid the heavy signet onto his middle finger. The ring was gold, with table-cut rubies at the shoulders and a large square bezel that bore, in intaglio, the crest of the office of Lord Commander. The band of the ring contained a biometric authority. Until the moment Namatjira had been ready to put it on, the ring had been secured in a stasis box carried by the warden's men-at-arms. No chances were taken. The ring had legal force in and of itself. Snare drums were rapping a tattoo in the stateroom beyond the Lord's private wardrobe. Namatjira looked in the full-length mirror and then turned to his escort. One of the Lucifer Blacks carried the Lord Commander's ceremonial hand-and-a-half sword, another his golden cap helm with its high crinière. Dinas Chain entered the room and saluted. "Is he here, Dinas?"
"His ship has just docked."
Namatjira snapped his fingers, and the dressers, the attendants and warden and his men hurried out through the servants' door. The Lord Commander turned and marched through the Ormolu archway into the stateroom, his companions in perfect step at his shoulders. Namatjira's flagship had been named Blamires after a concussion-age void navy commander that the Lord Commander particularly admired. The Blamires was one of the best-appointed and technically sophisticated vessels in the Imperial fleet. The stateroom he strode into was as long and broad as a cathedral's nave, paved in black and white tiles and walled with gold caryatid pillars and tall crystal mirrors. The high roof displayed scenes from the Age of Unification in fresco form. The ceremonial band's tempo intensified at the Lord Commander's approach, and the honour guard of 600 Outremar lancers snapped to present arms. Halfway down the stateroom, Major General Dev, in full-dress uniform, stood waiting with Jan van Aunger, the master of the fleet, and 8 senior adepts in long, emerald robes. Dev stood to attention as Namatjira came to a halt in front of him. The drumming ceased the moment Namatjira stopped walking.
"Lord Commander," said Dev, "the forces of the expedition stand ready for deployment. We await your authority."
Namatjira nodded.
"Master van Aunger?" he asked.
The venerable fleet master, robed in ermine and segmented mirror steel, made a namaste.
"The fleet abides, Lord Commander," he said. "All components and subcomponents report smooth running. The escort squadrons are ready for launch. Target solutions for the surface coordinates have been supplied to the siege frigates, railgun platforms, and all long-range ordnance. We can commence orbital bombardment at your discretion."
"Thank you, Master van Aunger. The bombardment will only be undertaken if necessary."
Van Aunger frowned.
"As I have advised you, sir, the bombardment should precede the drop. We can't very well hammer surface targets if our troops have already..."
"Thank you, Master van Aunger," said Namatjira. "You have your instructions."
Van Aunger stuck out his chin bullishly, but said nothing and stepped back.
"Lord Commander,"
Dev said gently, indicating the small jade coffer that one of the elderly adepts was holding on a velvet cushion.
"A moment, Major General," said Namatjira.
On cue, a fanfare of horns sounded outside the stateroom, and the double doors at the far end opened. Alpharius, alone, in full warplate, gleaming and polished, strode through and came down the stateroom towards them. His armoured bulk was so massive that the black and white tiles creaked like ice as they took each step.
"My Lord Primarch," said Namatjira, bowing, "welcome aboard."
"Lord Commander," Alpharius responded, making the sign of the Aquila and then unlocking his helmet. He removed it and held it under his arm. "Your message said that you wished to speak with me."
"Our business commences," said Namatjira.
"Let us pray it is fruitful," Alpharius agreed.
In the silvery radiance of the grand stateroom, his eyes seemed as green as the jade coffer on the adept's cushion.
"I'm about to issue authority," said Namatjira. "Is there any reason why I should not?"
"No, sir," Alpharius answered. "The objective must be sectioned and secured as rapidly as possible. You estimated 3 days?"
3 days, Lord Primarch, unless we encounter unexpected difficulties of terrain or climate or previously unidentified sources of resistance.
There has been no supplementary data suggesting that, sir, replied Alpharius.
Then we will proceed, said Namatjira.
For the Emperor, said Alpharius.
For the Emperor, the honor guard barked with one voice.
At a gesture from the Major General, the adept carrying the jade coffer brought it forward to the Lord Commander and knelt down. A second adept opened the coffer's lid with a small silver key. As soon as the lid lifted, the receiver of the biometric scanner inside opened like a flower and dilated. Namatjira reached in and pressed the bezel of his signet ring into the receiver. There was a whir and a brief pulse of light.
"Authority confirmed," the adept said.
Another fanfare sounded, and sirens began to blare in the depths of the flagship below. Namatjira withdrew his hand, and the adepts closed the coffer and stepped back.
"Lord Primarch, the forces of the 670th Expedition are deploying," said Namatjira.
"Thank you. Now, what did you want to speak about?" asked Alpharius.
"Oh, that. Let us withdraw. Privacy, I think, would be best," Namatjira replied.
Another buzzer sounded.
10 minutes,
Bronzy yelled above the hangar's uproar to his waiting company. He looked at Mu.
"Our beloved Lord General is cutting it fine. At this rate, we'll be making it up as we go along."
She did not respond to his bait. He tried again.
"I half expect to open the packet and find a note saying, 'Have a good time, see you soon,'" he said.
Mu grinned very slightly.
"Aksor," said Jani.
Mu turned. Jean Whip Boone came jogging across the pad towards them.
"Authority has finally been issued," he called as he approached. "At last," said Bronzy.
He tore open his order packet with his teeth. Mu took hers from Tiffain and opened it rather more demurely. They were both silent as they read.
"Well?"
asked Boone.
"Land and hold," said Bronzy.
"It doesn't seem too bad," said Mu.
"Open drop zone, mind, and the terrain looks ropey," said Bronzy.
"It doesn't seem too bad," Mu repeated.
"We're not far off the 5-minute buzzer," said Boone. "Anything you want to catch before it's too late?"
Bronzy shook his head.
"Then march in fortune," Boone said, and ran on to the next company.
Mu turned to her aides, who gathered around her and began her sept briefing. Bronzy took another look at his orders, checked he hadn't overlooked anything, and ambled over to his men. They all turned to him. Those that had been sitting down on the deck got to their feet.
"Jokers," he shouted, "today's benediction from His Highness the Lord Commander comes in the form of an orbit-to-surface drop into open country for seize-and-hold purposes."
There weren't too many groans.
"Terrain is said to be moderately contoured with moisture, which I think is tactical's way of saying precipices with waterfalls."
The men laughed.
"We'd better expect rugged geography, which means the drop is going to be tricky. Watch what you're doing, especially those lugging heavyweight kit. I don't want anybody coming off the ramp onto a slope or scarp and going over. No broken necks, please. No broken legs or ankles, not even sprains. I'm looking at you, Trooper Nkomi."
More laughter.
"Full dispersal when we hit. Vishnu formation. Aksor Mu will sept your markers. Get down, get to those markers, and dig in. The object of the exercise is the seizure of territory. Once we've got our feet dry, we'll advance as per my instruction as the situation allows. Plan is we'll be marching in country on this one, my lucky lads, so let's hope none of you skimped on the endurance training."
More groans.
"Remember, my jokers, a drop zone is like a woman. Land on her firmly and make sure you have the vital parts located before you get going.
The men laughed again.
If the drop goes according to plan, Bronzy continued, we'll have the Carnivales west of us and a unit of light armour to our east. Of course, the drop will not go according to plan, because they never do. So expect to be facing the wrong way with your heads up your arses. All right, settle. Wasn't that funny, Zhu?
The men quietened down.
This isn't a ramble, Bronzy declared. This is a serious operation. Extraordinary, don't you know? So no backsliding, no idling, no thinking with your pants on backwards, no tarting about, and no mistakes. You're the Geno's own jokers, best in the Chilead. So be sharp, be alert, and be what the trickster God created you to be. Which, in case you didn't know, is to be the best fucking assault infantry to ever come out of Terra. Questions? Lapis? Will it be cold? Fug me on a stick, Bronzy shook his head. Yes, so bring mittens and a scarf, Lapis, you pretty little girl.
The men laughed loudly, and Trooper Lapis fended off playful slaps and jabs.
Calm down, said Bronzy. In all honesty, it looks like it'll be pissy damp and cold. Scans show open land, little shelter and steady precipitation, which is rain to you, Trooper Kashan. Hands up anyone who ignored this morning's standing order and didn't put on his boot liners and underglove or sleeve his weapon. Better still, don't tell me. I don't want to know how stupid you decided to be when you got up today. If you get trench foot or crotch rot, if you freeze or you find your fucking weapon won't actually fire, then it's your hard boo-hoo, and the gene whips will see you later. Anything else?
Che raised his hand.
Che, is this going to be a sensible question, or something about the availability of local fruit produce, like last time?
I like fruit, Che protested.
Good for you. Your question?
The one thing you haven't covered, Het, Che said.
What hostiles can we expect to meet and greet?
The jokers whooped and roared aggressively. Bronzy raised a hand for quiet.
Excellent point, Che. There's a reason I haven't covered it. According to the specs, our target world is uninhabited. There are no hostiles.
This provoked the rowdiest chorus of all.
That's right, that's right. We're dropping Dirtside for a nice walk in mountain scenery, Bronzy yelled above it. Now shut up! That's better. What's the first rule of common soldiering, Trooper Duarte?
Always assume that anyone in a position senior to you isn't telling you everything.
That's my boy. There's more to this than meets the eye. So don't get slack.
A buzzer sounded, crude and brazen across the vast deck.
That's it, Bronzy yelled. The 5-minute buzzer. Pick up your stuff, pick up your arses, and leave all your complaints and regrets on the carrier. They'll still be here when you get back. Jokers, are you with me? March in fortune,
they yelled back.
Company first, Imperium second, Geno before Gene, he shouted. Now, get the fuck on with it.
He strolled back towards Honan Mu. Her briefing had finished and the aides had gathered into a tight huddle, discussing tactical variations in fierce, low voices.
No hostiles, he remarked to Mu. That's just got to be bad data. Right?
Mu shrugged.
There's another alternative. This is a seize and hold. The Lord Commander is asking us to make a section of territory secure. I'm tempted to suppose there's something valuable down there, and we're being sent in to secure the ground so that it can be recovered.
Something valuable? Like what?
I don't know, she said. Perhaps the Lord Commander's congenial side?
Bronzy blinked.
What? She asked.
You made a joke, Uxor, he beamed. An actual, proper, honest-to-goodness joke.
She looked back at him. Her mouth wasn't smiling, but her eyes were.
Yes, Well, don't tell everyone, or they'll all want one, she said.
The deck quivered, and they heard the distant rumbling squeal of the plasma catapults at the stern end of the platform discharging.
That's the first of the escort fighters away, said Bronzy. It won't be long now. Nervous?
Why would I be nervous, Hurtado? Mu asked.
He hunched his shoulders.
It's not often that the Uxors get to ride down with us soldier types at the sharp end of things. You usually follow on with the support lines.
Operational requirements, she replied. We can't provide you with reliable SEPT coverage from orbit.
Uh-huh. So, I was thinking I could arrange to sit next to you and hold your hand if it gets bumpy, Bronzy offered.
That won't be necessary, she replied. I've made my share of combat drops. March in fortune, Hurtado.
Sept me well, Honan, he replied.
She made a half bow and returned to her girls. Bronzy took one last look around the vast carrier deck. An electric munition train clattered past. Four flight crewmen were frantically working to replace a faulty hydraulic on the nose gear of a nearby lander. Another pair of hook-nosed escort fighters whined by overhead on the primary hoist. The tanks had finally started loading, and more armour pieces had drawn up on the ramp from the lower deck, waiting to advance to the wait line for boarding. He did what he always did before a drop, his private ritual. He pressed his fingertips to his lips and then bent down and touched his fingertips against the deck.
Let us all see you again, he whispered. Let us all come back safe.
He rose. He pulled his order packet out of his pocket and made one final check to make sure he hadn't missed anything. It turned out he had. Tucked inside the vellum sleeve, along with his sheaf of orders, was a small green sliver that he at first assumed was a leaf. He realized that it was a wafer-slim piece of metal, machined to resemble a lizard's scale. On it, in Edessan, was written a brief, whimsical phrase, which translated as, "Your father cheers, your mother cries, that is the lot of the soldier." Beside the phrase was the embossed brand of the Hydra. Bronzy stroked his thumb across the raised image. He put the green scale in his pocket and walked towards the waiting dropship. Namat Jira led Alpharius into the forward lookout of the flagship Lemire's. Vast petal-form ports glazed the side walls of the triangular chamber and met in a sharp apex overlooking the kilometre of prow projecting ahead of them.
"Give us the room,"
Namat Jira snapped, and the servants and ensigns hurried out. Chain closed the hatch behind them and stood guard, his hands behind his back. Alpharius turned and looked pointedly at the Lucifer.
"He goes where I go,"
Namat Jira explained, helping himself to a flute of frost wine from a side cabinet.
"Dinas has the highest clearance."
Alpharius nodded.
"Very well," he allowed. "A toast, Lord Primarch? Or is that contrary to your regimen?"
"Why not?" the Primarch replied. Namat Jira poured a second glass and handed it to Alpharius. The subservos of the Primarch's gauntlet hissed and whined as they adjusted to the subtle act of gripping the flute without shattering it. Namat Jira walked towards the starboard side of the ports. His thylacine lay snoozing on the bank of seats under the windows.
"That's the masculine,"
Namat Jira said, pointing with the same hand that was holding the glass.
"A heavy carrier, very versatile. That, behind it, you see, is the Tancredi, an Outremar vessel."
Alpharius came and stood behind him. The view from the lookout was humbling. The plates of the ports had self-tinted to reduce glare and diminish the blaze of the local sun. Space fell away beneath them and soared away above. A trillion stars glimmered in that endless night. To the starboard side of the Blamires lay the eclipsed target world, a massive globe with a peel of light just slipping off its shoulder. After the flagship starboard, a formation of mainline vessels hung, gleaming in the target world's shadow, laid out in a chain astern across several thousand kilometres.
"That's the Agostini," Namajira went on, "and behind it the siege frigate Barbastian. Behind that, the carrier Loudon."
"I know the names and indicatives of all the fleet vessels," said Alpharius. Namajira smiled and turned to face him, taking a sip of his wine.
"I'm sure you do, sir. But, oddly, I cannot name your great barge."
He glanced back at the ports.
"That's it there, isn't it?"
he asked, pointing towards a dark blur 700 kilometres off the Blamires' starboard bow.
"That shielded object."
"We do not name our ships," Alpharius said. "We simply designate them with serials."
"Oh, and what is that barge's designation?" asked Namajira.
"Beta," replied Alpharius.
"Ah, I'm forced to wonder what Alpha is doing this day," Namajira grinned.
"It is occupied elsewhere," Alpharius replied. Namajira turned back and looked the giant figure up and down.
"Well, to business. My Lord Primarch, I summoned you because I find I have some misgivings."
"Misgivings?" Alpharius asked.
"You made a firm commitment to me, sir, at Empezal. You swore that this undertaking would absolve the shame of the Nerth fiasco. You promised it would present me with the opportunity to make reparations for that loss and restore my dignity and reputation in the eyes of the Council of Terra."
"I stand by that promise," Alpharius said. Namajira wandered over to one of the window couches and sat down. He took another sip of his wine.
"As you explained it to me," he said, "the purpose of this mission is to acquire information vital to the continued security of the Imperium. The Emperor, you said, will thank me and reward me for securing this valuable intelligence and bringing it to his attention. I might even expect a place on the High Council. I can only speculate as to what this information could possibly be."
He paused.
"And that's where my misgivings begin. I can only speculate because you won't tell me. I think it's high time you let me a little deeper into your confidence."
"I see," said Alpharius.
"You just watched me issue my authority and mobilize my forces in your service, Lord Alpharius," said Namajira with a slight tone of menace. "I deserve to know more."
Alpharius pursed his lips and set his flute down, untouched. "You were willing enough," he said, "when I co-opted your expedition for this venture. My word was sufficient guarantee then."
"Well, it turns out it isn't any more," said Namajira.
"That's a pity," said Alpharius.
"What is the nature of this information?" asked Namajira. "What does it concern? Where is it, and how do we secure it? Who has it? How did you learn of its existence and its location? What could possibly be so important, so valuable, so revelatory, so damn secret that the fate of all human culture depends upon it?"
"You will know precisely what I choose to tell you, Namajira," said Alpharius.
"My Lord Commander said he needs to know more," Dinas Chain stated quietly but firmly.
He took a step forwards. Alpharius slowly turned his head and looked at Chain.
"Or what, companion? I hope for your sake that you don't presume to threaten me."
Chain did not move. Alpharius ignored him and looked down at Namajira.
"I had heard that the Lucifer Blacks were remarkably brave. I didn't realize they were clinically insane."
"Step back, Dinas," said Namajira, with a casual flick of his hand.
My Lord Alpharius understands the burden of command. He knows full well that the paramount responsibility of a man in my position is the security and welfare of his forces, and it is his solemn duty to disengage those forces from any undertaking that he deems unwise or reckless. Isn't that right, my lord?
Alpharius said nothing.
I will not put my soldiers in harm's way without a very good reason, said Namatjira. A very good reason, and a reliable source of intelligence. I would be derelict in my duty otherwise.
Alpharius gazed through the ports for a moment and contemplated the dark world below.
In the course of the Nerth campaign, he said quietly, my infiltration networks encountered the agent of a Xenoform faction. The faction calls itself the Cabal. The agent claimed that the Cabal was in possession of certain information vital to the Imperium of Man. No evidence or provenance was offered, but the Cabal had clearly put a great deal of effort and ingenuity into making contact with me. They extended an invitation to meet with them so that this information could be transmitted. 42 Hydra Tertius is the site chosen for that meeting.
Are you saying that this whole endeavour was inspired by the baseless tattle of some Xenos spy? Asked Namatjira. Dear me, sir, I thought you were shrewd.
I never said I believed him, Alpharius replied. While there's even a chance that his story is true, we cannot afford to ignore it. If it's a lie, then we're here, in force, to locate and suppress a dangerous Xenoform power that has the means and skills to attempt manipulation of the Imperium. This is how I presented it to the War Master, and it is on this basis that he granted this expedition extraordinary status. Lord Commander, we may be about to save the Imperium, or go to war to exterminate an insidious alien menace.
Namatjira rose to his feet.
And which do you suppose it is, sir?
Alpharius shook his head.
I make no guesses, Lord, but there is one significant fact. It was the agent who first warned me of the Black Cube. But for that warning, we would all be dead.
And this agent? Asked Namatjira.
He was operating inside the Imperial Army in an extremely capable and efficient manner. He got remarkably close to the center of things.
Alpharius looked over at Chain.
He slew one of your men, companion.
Connick Henniker, whispered Chain.
That's right, said Alpharius. That was one of the identities he adopted, at least. My operatives captured him on the last day of Nerth's existence. He's in my custody.
Well, murmured Namatjira.
He lit up a very careful and benevolent smile.
I feel my misgivings ebbing away. Thank you for your disclosure. This will, of course, remain entirely classified.
I expect no less, Alpharius replied.
He turned and walked towards the hatch.
I take it our conversation is done.
One last thing, Namatjira called to him. If the story is true and this meeting takes place, I will naturally be there at your side.
The Lord Commander didn't wait to see how Alpharius might respond. He turned to the windows.
Oh, look, there they go, he cried out jauntily and pointed.
Bright sparks like meteorites had begun to sear down out of the carriers behind them. Alpharius opened the hatch and left the lookout.
Dinas, Namatjira said, in the light of the Primarch's comments, please re-examine all the data we have on Connig Henniker.
Yes, sir.
Namatjira took a sip of wine and tilted his head to one side reflectively, watching the dropships fall.
I believe it will be instructive to learn how the picture fills in now that we have more pieces of it, he said, particularly in terms of the Astartes and their manipulation networks.
Yes, sir,
Chain replied. The dropship lurched and fell. Metal spalling from the release claws showered backwards in a glittering tail behind it. They began to pull 2 Gs, 3. The airframe began to vibrate. Bronzy held out his hand, and Moo took it. She squeezed it.
"Here we go," Bronzy said.